Welcome to Fusion, a show for Relay FM members, where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by David Smith of Under the Radar, and we're going to talk about WWDC. It is just, as we record this, 3 weeks away, which I find very upsetting.
It is a little upsetting. It's true.
It's come around so quickly yet again. But I thought we could talk about what we want to see. I want to ask you about the importance of WWDC. So you're an iOS developer. How many WWDCs have you been to now?
Like, this will be my 10th consecutive WWDC.
Congrats. So 10. So I want to hear from you about maybe how that's changed over the 10 years and what you find valuable in it after all this time. So maybe let's start there. So as a developer who attends the conference, what are you looking to get out of it every year?
And our sort of year, it starts the Monday of WWDC. Like, in terms of, that is when Apple announces all of the things that are likely going to dictate the course and sort of flavor of the following year. They're going to let us know the things that they're interested in. They're going to let us know the new technologies and platforms, and likely hint towards the hardware that we're going to see this fall. Like, that is just sort of what WWDC has become. And so, you know, as someone who makes my living making apps for that platform, it is that transition point every year where suddenly I kind of have to decide where I'm going to go and what I'm going to work on, and largely trying to work out what Apple cares about, because it's an important part of marketing and making sure that I'm kind of building the right things to pay attention to that. And so WWDC is that, is that week where on Monday morning they announce a whole bunch of new stuff, and then it's like the rest of that week is trying to unpack it, spend time with Apple engineers to make sure I understand it, and just kind of as best as I can pull out what the next year is going to look like from that experience. And it's just something that it's a week I certainly enjoy. I mean, there's also all the other kind of things that go along on the side where, as a developer going to WWDC, in some ways it's a bit rough, because there's the, like, this is like the most important like week of my work, as like it's a very important work week. But then additionally, there's all kind of the more social and entertainment, and like all my friends are in town for this one week where we all get together, and so there's certainly a tension between those two things that can be a little bit awkward. But it's like, and sometimes I wish I would just go to WWDC just to hang out, but instead,
I mean, it's great. It's great, but I don't have apps to build, so yeah. I'm in a little bit different position. I sense that tension in people who are there to attend the conference, right? It was like, hey, let's go hang out at night, but I've got to be at, I almost said Moscone, but I have to be at the venue in, 8 hours. Yeah. I should really go and get some sleep. And people sort of disappear throughout the day going to sessions or going to labs. And I know from talking to you in the past, the labs are a really important component to what you want to get done that week. So for those who aren't familiar, what are the labs at WWDC, and why are they sort of special in terms of access to Apple?
Sure. So as an Apple developer, like, you have very limited access to like Apple itself. That Apple has broadly a structure where, they present the new APIs, the new documentation, and they kind of just put it out there. And they have an evangelism team, which is great for kind of like a little bit of help and support, or if you have a kind of a question that you can reach out to, and sometimes they're able to help you. But for the most part, you're just kind of on your own. But at WWDC, they have labs. And so there's the part that I think externally people would see who don't go to attend the conference, which are all the sessions, like the biggest of which are obviously like the keynote and the State of the Union. And then throughout the week, they'll have sessions that are just, they're keynote presentations where people are, engineers are up on the stage talking through things. And then while all this is going on downstairs, they have labs, which are, they're separated out by topic usually, or by framework, so say like the ones that I usually go to are the health lab or the core motion lab, or, kind of the frameworks that are relevant for your application. And they just have usually, 10 or 20 engineers. And typically it's the engineers who built the thing that you're, that framework, that technology, and they're just available for you to ask questions to. And it's really the only time, you know, that I have access to these people. And so it's a tremendous opportunity to be like, I'm having this problem when I use this API, and you're talking to the person who wrote that, who created it in the first place, who understands its intention, and they're able to set you straight. Or honestly, a lot of the big value I get out of it is when it's a new thing and I'm trying to understand how it works. And sometimes it isn't necessarily at a technical level, but it's understanding what is the intention behind this. Like, what problem are they trying to solve? And you can kind of guess sometimes, but it's also really cool to just be able to say, like, I see that, you know, you added a new method or a new ability to this framework. Why did you do that? What are some of the use cases that you're thinking about for that? And like, that was actually how, years ago, when I came up with it, sort of like the start for Sleep++, my Apple Watch sleep tracker, was I went to the Core Motion Lab and they added this kind of odd library to the Apple Watch where it would record motion events and you could get like this detailed data. I'm like, what are you kind of doing with this? And then they're talking about like, well, you could use it for a lot of things. You could use it for, analyzing someone's stroke when they're playing tennis, or analyzing someone's sleep while they are resting, or whatever you wanted to do. And it's like, oh, that's what you're trying to do with that. And it was a useful thing to just kind of set my, set me on a path of understanding. And there's just no sort of like equivalent for it. And so I go to WDC mostly just because I want to go to those labs and I want to be there to talk to those engineers. And honestly, there's a little bit in the back of my mind that there's a hope that if subsequently I file bugs against the frameworks, and there's a small chance that they'll recognize me or my apps, and maybe they'll, you know, give me a little bit more love as a result. But, you know, you never really know if that's actually happening. But I like to think that going there, being engaged, asking good questions, and hopefully making a positive impression on the engineers, you know, has additional kind of like minor benefits moving forward as well.
Do you think that the labs have increased in value as iOS as a platform has become more complex? I mean, thinking about the first several versions of the SDK, that it was not that it wasn't complicated, but compared to what we have now, in hindsight, seems relatively simple. Are those labs more valuable now that there's more things these devices can do?
I think what's the biggest difference is just how diversified the platform is now, and how like the labs I think are reflect that as well. That, you know, I think in the my if I'm trying to think back to like my 2000 you know my 2009 WWDC, it was like the number of topics or like subdivisions of the labs were relatively less. Like there's like 8 topics or 9 topics of that, and back then I think there were a lot more Mac ones that were sort of pulled out separately, or other technologies that don't really aren't as prominent in Apple's sort of emphasis right now. But now you have, like, there's such a tremendous diversity along the platform that the labs specialize in that. And so you can go and talk about someone with something very specific and detailed. And I think that is something that is certainly helpful, that it isn't just UIKit or the, you know, core foundation or the system frameworks or like these very basic things. Like, you can go and dive into something really specific. You know, if you want to go and talk to someone about the calendaring APIs, like there's a whole lab specifically about that, or a lot of the, you know, the motion or health or the photo stuff or the camera stuff. Like, there's such a diversity there, and it's reflected in, you know, like the lab's schedule is a giant mess. Like, they usually have it on these like huge screens as you walk into the sort of the labs area. And it's just, you know, at any one time, there's probably, you know, 8 or 9 different labs going on. And, you know, they just run consecutively throughout the entire day. And so there's just such a diversity there, which is just really cool. And that's how, when, you know, they'll often have a slide at the in the keynote where they're talking about, you know, oh, we're so excited and we have, you know, thousands of developers here and we have thousands of Apple engineers here. Like, that's why they have so many, like, it's actually thousands of engineers, because there's such a variety of topics that are being covered that throughout the week it just keeps, you know, rolling over from topic to topic to topic.
It's interesting to think through that as the platform has evolved and spread out, that WBC itself has changed and has evolved to meet those needs. And I would imagine that, you know, you were there on the iPhone very early, as you've spoken about other places, your 10th WWDC. But I'd imagine, too, there are a lot of people every year who it's their first or second or third WWDC, who are newer, who don't have some of that background. For those types of people, for those types of developers attending the conference, do you feel like it is an approachable place? Do you feel like those labs and those sessions are sort of easy to get into and be heard? Or do you think there's a level of comfort that you've gained over the years that make it easier for you?
I think it is probably more, I have an increased level of confidence about that experience, that I'm not less nervous than I used to be. Like, I remember in my early years, I didn't go to the labs very much, or I didn't talk to people, or like, I didn't want to feel like, it's like, I felt nervous that like, I go to the lab and I like ask my question, that's, you know, something that's bothering me. And then it's kind of going to be like laughed out the room. Like I think that it can be intimidating in that way. And like, what I try and tell anybody who I run into, it's like their first one, it's like, you need to engage in this process and it is going to be fine. Like the engineers are like, they are so excited to talk about what they're working on and what they've just done. Like, from many of these engineers, they have spent the last several years often working on some, you know, some new feature in iOS in complete secrecy. They haven't been able to talk to anyone outside of their team about it. And suddenly now it's out in the world. And they have this one week where they're able to go and talk to people about it and be kind of excited about what it is that they've been doing. Like, they want to talk to you. They want to be excited with you. And it's a really cool thing. And it's not scary once you get started with something. And I think that is something that I wish in those early years I had more confidence about me in that way, that I would just go and ask questions. And sometimes realize that even if you don't have a great question or like something that's super deep in the weeds or super complicated, you can just go and ask a general question and be like, hey, if I was going to start using this, what would be some best practices or thoughts that you would have about it? And you can start a conversation, and that can be just as useful. And I think if you're like someone coming to WWDC new, which I think they always say that, I think the majority of people, it's their first year. They often have a slide at the beginning where it says at least, you know, it's like 60% of people, it's their first year at WWDC. And I would always just say, encourage people to make the most of it, to engage there, to be present. Like, try not to just go to sessions, because sessions are kind of the easy thing to do. You just go and sit. But you know, the videos are available every night, so there's kind of no point in being there in the room necessarily, unless it's something that you like have to go to the session to get the information so that you can then be prepared for something else coming up later. Like, you know, sometimes there'll be a session right before a lab, and if you see that sort of thing line up, it sometimes is a key that they're going to announce something or talk about something in a session that you kind of want to be aware of. But just being there and engage in it, and go to the activities, there's often things in the morning or evening, like it's just going there and taking full advantage of it, and, you know, not sort of feeling like you're stuck, both, you know, and that's at the conference as well as just generally, like being, you know, in terms of meeting people and, making friends, making connections at the conference. Earlier years, I think what I found is I would just be too timid about it. And I think it's nice to have developed a little bit of confidence around that, because my experience has been positive, you know, that it feels scary, but the reality is, you know, I'm with my people that week. And so it's much better than, it's like it, of all the places for me to, start a conversation with the stranger, it is the easiest week for me to start a conversation, because we have so much in common.
I think that's true in a lot of aspects of WWDC, not just the conference itself, but the social aspect of it, right? If you're there hanging out, or you're at AltConf for, you know, layers or something like that, it can be intimidating to see somebody, you know, from the internet to say hi, or to like engage in a conversation with someone you don't know very well. But I've really found that for the most part, it's a pretty welcoming week, and that people who are there are all there for this, you know, similar reasons, and you can sort of get through some of that initial awkwardness because people are all interested in the same thing at the end of the day.
Yeah. And you always have something to start a conversation with, because like there's a shared bit of knowledge that you're, you know, that we're all kind of thinking about. So you can always just start, be like, you know, what are you excited about from the announcements this week? Like,
yeah,
that is a question I've asked many times during WWDC, because there's always an answer. Like it's a very straightforward thing. It's not particularly invasive or like personal question, but it starts a conversation and you can kind of go from there.
So let's shift gears a little bit in the time we have left and talk about what you would like to see from Apple this year. I think the sort of the elephant in the room is Marzipan, right? iOS apps
coming
to the Mac. I'm very curious if you have any thoughts around that, or beyond that. What would you like to see? What would make the apps that you make better for customers through what Apple could say next month.
Sure. I mean, I think on macOS, I think the biggest thing that I'm looking towards is, you know, like, what is Apple's story with bringing UIKit to the Mac? That, you know, it's interesting because they gave us a sneak peek last year, and, you know, they've shipped some apps that kind of use the technology that they're building. But I think what I'm most curious about is to try and get a sense of really what their vision for the future is for the platform. You know, is this the something that they're kind of expecting to promote as the sort of like, this is the direction they're heading and the everything else is going to kind of start to fall away, like this is going to be the primary way, or if this is going to be something that they kind of expect to support in parallel for a long time, and, you know, do their actions align with what they're saying and so on. Like, in the same way, in a weird way, it makes me think of how, you know, at this point Swift and Objective-C kind of, you know, they live in which are the two languages that you can write applications for Apple's platforms with. Like, they kind of exist and they coexist, and, you know, and Swift is the new hot thing and it's been around for 5 years now, 4 or 5 years. Objective-C hasn't gone away. It hasn't been kind of neglected. It continues to, you know, be fully supported and maintained. And I feel like it's going to be interesting to see Apple's story there, because it certainly is exciting to me. A few of my apps where it makes a lot of sense to bring them to the Mac, and I haven't done it because it wasn't, you know, it's sort of the potential opportunity was didn't justify the effort it would take to rebuild a lot of the app and the interactions. Whereas if it's much more similar to the experience of, you know, taking an iPhone app and turning it into an iPad app, and if I've already done that and made an iPad app and just running that iPad app, you know, with a few changes on the Mac, like, that's huge. That's one of those things where I can explore that market and I can explore what that might mean without nearly the investment otherwise, which, you know, certainly for me, I'm an independent developer. Like, it's just me doing the coding. And so, like, taking on a whole new platform is a pretty intimidating thing that has to have a huge justification, and it's hard to be experimental with. And so I'm excited that it might be something that is something that I can start to experiment with. And, you know, but it's funny, like, I was trying to think of my list of things that I'm interested for macOS, and really it's like, that's it. Like, that is the area that I'm most curious in. Whereas on, like, the watchOS or iOS, like, there are other things that, you know, it would be excited to see. Whereas on macOS, like, it is just very interesting to see the direction they're going, because I think it's a very pivotal moment for, you know, for the operating system and for the platform, that it's like, it's changing fundamentally the way that we make apps in the same way that when they went from, you know, classic to OS X and for Carbon to Cocoa transition. And the Mac has been through many of these before. And, like, this is another kind of one of these pivots.
Yeah, it feels like a huge shift. I mean, I think that this next version of macOS, without a doubt, will be the largest and most important we've seen in a long, long time. Yeah. You know, maybe since Yosemite with the UI change, but honestly, that was still the same OS. Like, this feels like a kind of a new era in a way that I think is exciting. I think I understand why people are nervous about it, but hearing people like you speak about, hey, you know, you have these great apps on iOS, and for those that make sense on the Mac, you know, bringing those over is going to be beneficial for the Mac, I think, in the long term, right? Not everything's going to come over, right? Like, you're not going to do sleep tracking with an iMac Pro.
No.
Probably. It's not, you know, it's kind of pokey around the edges. I'm not sure you want that in bed next to you. But for apps that do make sense, I think that it could really help bring the Mac into the modern era. And as a Mac user, I find that exciting. You spend a lot of time in your apps and your development on the Apple Watch.
I do.
And I'm curious what you think about what Apple could do there this year, or something you would like to see them do to bring that platform forward.
I have, like, my biggest hopes are always around watchOS. Like, it is a platform that I really see a tremendous possibility for and a future for. And I, as kind of rough as it can sometimes be to develop on, I really enjoy developing for the watch. I think there is something that is powerful about it, both its constraints that I think forces you to be a bit creative, as well as just the impact that it can have. Like, the Apple Watch is the device where you can be impacting people's lives, especially I make a lot of health and fitness apps, and it's like, you are you know, I hear stories and get emails from people who are using their Apple Watch to, you know, dramatically make changes to their health and wellness. And like, that is just amazing to hear. And so what I always want as a developer, I think, for the watch is to see it become more mature. And it's really nice in some ways that it has a lot of opportunity to grow and to develop, that, you know, iOS at this point is pretty mature. It's not that it's like finished, but it's, you know, they're the improvements are becoming much more incremental and somewhat marginal for iOS, whereas on the watch there is still tremendous work that could be done. And at its most fundamental level, it's like making a much more interactive and rich user interface would be wonderful. Like right now, the way we make watchOS apps has its legacy in the first generation of watch apps, which ran on your phone and were like projected onto your wrist, which was this kind of crazy system they came up with for the first generation of watchOS, and it sort of works, but we're still building apps. Like now, at least we can run the watch app on the watch, but it's still built in this way that is designed around those kinds of constraints, and so it becomes very limited, and it becomes like there are just things that I can't do as a developer that I want to be able to do that I just can't. And it would be great if those went away. And especially because Apple's apps that they make don't use those same constraints. They can use what is much more similar to the iOS development system structure, as best as I can tell. And so they can do, you know, animations and interactivity and have a richness and dynamism to their applications that just, you know, I've come up with all kinds of weird hacks and terrible workarounds to make my apps a bit more interesting in that way. But at some point you run into a limit, and that can be frustrating. And then I would also like, I think for most watch apps, far more important to than the actual user interface of the app itself is the way that you interact with it outside of the app, and typically through complications, though to some degree notifications as well. But the complication system I feel like it has this history that limits what sort of how dynamic it can be and how interactive it can be, and the way in which it's structured. I mean, even simple things like an app can only export a single complication for any of the given families, you know. So if you wanted to have one app that showed two different things, say in each of the corners of the, you know, of the utility face, you can't. They have to always be identical, which is completely arbitrary and seems kind of silly. Like there's all kinds of rich and interesting things you could imagine you could do if your complications could be, you know, an app could provide as many of them as you wanted. I mean, and that's not even to get into, you know, one of my favorite things is the thought of making more customized watch face mm-hmm. designs themselves. Like that's something that this last year I've built probably a dozen custom watch faces just for my own use. That once you start going down that road and are able to experience what it's like to have a watch that really feels like yours because you've customized it, you've designed it, it's doing exactly what you want, like that's just really cool. So, I mean, my hope for the watch is primarily just like, I want to feel like it's continuing to move forward and continuing to get more mature. And I'm hopeful that it will, because Apple clearly is putting a huge amount of emphasis into the watch, and health and fitness is like a big tentpole feature for Apple right now. So I'm hopeful that it will continue to kind of get the effort it, you know, sort of, I feel like it deserves, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. It seems so funny to me that the watch has been really refined over time so much. Remember that first keynote? It was like, it's going to do everything your phone does. And that just didn't make any sense, and they have, over time, made it more and more focused on fitness and notifications. Those are the two things people were using it for. It has come a long way in those regards. But then you look at the watch face, like you said, that is what people interact with, and it is, for the most part, as limited as it was in the beginning, and that really blows my mind that it hasn't made great strides there. So I hope you're right. I hope that it is many times more customizable than it is now, because it should be. It's something that you wear on your wrist. It is part fashion, part technology, and I think it needs to come along in those areas.
I think, too, like it's, I don't fault Apple for not knowing what the platform was going to be when they first came out because they were guessing. Like, it was a new category and a new kind of interactivity. And I, like, the degree to which people, the way in which people were using it. And if you think about all the different things that, like, the side button on the watch has connected to over the years, like, it's, it is, they had no idea, and they're just kind of working their way through. And what I hope is that if they're, it's like, if they were being, you know, is that if they were, if at the beginning they didn't know, maybe they didn't want to invest until they knew. But I think at this point it really seems to have gelled around some very primary use cases, and sort of emphasizing those, and now that we know what it is, like, we can really kind of make a run at it, I think makes a lot of sense. And it's, I think it, honestly, it's the platform that seems like it has the biggest growth for Apple at this point. Like, I think, you know, the sales of the Apple Watch seems to be very good. It can, you know, I see more and more people wearing them. I see in my, you know, my user base, in my analytics, I see more and more users who have them. It's something that seems like it's, you know, it's a big growth area for Apple. And so, you know, now that it's like, I feel like it's a mature platform, I think it just needs to, it's like it needs to have the tooling and abilities commensurate with, you know, its maturity, that I feel like we kind of have a sense of it, that most people I know who wear it are using it for fitness tracking, and they like being, that they can make their phone always on silent, but never miss a, you know, never miss a, you know, a text or something like that. Is those seem to be the two big reasons why people wear an Apple Watch. You know, it isn't for, you know, playing games on it or reading the news or all the things that we could kind of imagine in the early days. It is really those two things. And you can build a lot of really interesting things around that with that kind of focus and clarity.
Anything else before we wrap up that's just really got you excited for this year?
I mean, I think the big thing, honestly, there is a big part of me that just would love to see a little bit of hardware sprinkled in at WWDC, like some,
like a Mac Pro shaped hardware,
a little bit like a Mac Pro, or just to have some, like, this is of like a WWDC. In some ways, it's nice because we know we're not going to get iOS hardware anymore. Like, that's just, they are, that used to be the case. Like, I remember being so, like, blown away when the iPhone 4 was introduced and its Retina screen, and Steve Jobs talking about how they had to buy, you know, like, buy these special projectors that they needed in order to show enough resolution to give you a sense of how sharp it was going to be, and like all that. Like, that was really cool. That's not where we are anymore. Those will come out in the fall. But in a weird way, what I like is that the hardware that we tend to now get at WWDC, I feel like, is things that are tools for developers. And more generally, they're tools for professionals, but obviously they're pitching them in some ways to the developer audience. And, you know, if you want to get a group of 5,000 developers really excited, you know, give us good tools, you know, laptops with good keyboards and a clear vision about what's going on with the, you know, the platform. I think the Mac Pro is another one where it is something where it's like, of all the audiences that you're going to have, who's going to like lose their mind and be super excited, like, this is the one. In the same way that when the iMac Pro came out and it was announced at WWDC, it was exciting, and like they had like a room where we could go and look at it, and like it was exciting and interesting. And I hope we get a little bit of that. Like, I'm in the market for a new laptop, but I'm not going to buy one until WWDC, because if it's ever going to come, like, that seems like a good week for it. And it's, you know, it is nice in some ways that, in a weird way, like, Apple is serving both sides of what I do. They're providing the software and the frameworks and the things that I, you know, actually build with. And then they're actually, you know, then they're also building the thing that I'm running that on, like the laptop and the iMac Pro and the iPhone and the Apple Watch. And so, like, it's, in some ways, I always like it when we kind of get fed on both sides, not just on the software side. You know, I'll be a little sad if, you know, typically if there's not going to be any hardware, there's like a week before there's some, you know, some Bloomberg report saying this is not going to be, you know, this is going to be all software. And whenever I see that, it always kind of makes me sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's definitely room for hardware. I just have been assuming, honestly, that the Mac Pro would follow the iMac Pro trajectory that you said, you know, announce it at WWDC, have an event in November, ship it at the end of the year, right? Yeah. I think that worked really well for that product. Look, I'm sitting in front of one now. Clearly, it worked on me.
Yeah, it worked on me too. And I'm sitting in front of one too.
Yeah. And I think the Mac Pro could definitely follow that trajectory. I mean, if you look back at when Apple has made Pro hardware announcements, very often that does intersect with WWDC for that reason. You're playing to the home base, right? A group of developers is going to be way rowdier about that than press at a September event, right? So, and I think Apple likes that sometimes. Yeah. So I think they could slot that in very easily. And I, I'm just hopeful that they do, because there's a lot of work to be done on Mac hardware.
Yeah, and I think and providing a clear vision. Like I don't like the feeling that I want to get a new laptop, but I'm like, I feel so conflicted about that, and like my feelings are so messed up. Of like, do I really want it? Do I want to, like, previously I would just like go. I would just go max out on a MacBook Pro and I'd be done. But now it's like, I don't know what I want to do. Do I just want to get something basic because this is going to be replaced in the next year or so? Like, that uncertainty, that ambiguity, like, that's not a nice feeling. And I can't imagine that's good kind of multiplied by their entire user base, where like there's so much uncertainty about like, what should I get? When should I get it? Like, that's not good for sales. And it's not a nice feeling as someone who, you know, wants to go spend a few thousand dollars on a new laptop. Like, I shouldn't have that kind of uncertainty about, you know, that kind of decision.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, thanks for the time today. People can find you on Under the Radar, and they can find you on Twitter at _DavidSmith. Is that right?
That's right.
Cool. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Fusion. This is a members-only podcast of Relay FM. If you're listening to this and you're not a member, that's okay. We still love you. But you should check out the membership program. Head over to relay.fm/membership. And you can select a show to support. And I would recommend Under the Radar, which comes out twice a month. Marco and _ talking about independent iOS app development. I am not an independent iOS developer, but I am an independent worker. And I listen, you know, API talk isn't necessarily for me, but I think you all have a lot of smart things to say about being self-employed or having a side project and how to manage all that. I think there's a lot there for lots of people beyond just developers.
And we're never longer than 30 minutes. So, you know. It's an easy show to fit in.
Yeah, that's always a good promise. Some of our shows definitely go longer. But so we'll be back next month. We'll be at WWDC. Both of us will be there. So if you're there and you see us, say hi. And until then, adios.
Bye.